Welcome to the Future of Ground Transportation podcast, where we discuss the exciting innovations that lie ahead for organizational ground transportation. Each episode, we cover topics tailored to those resolving transportation-related challenges and provide tips, tools, and trends that will inspire you to stay ahead of the curve. And now, here's your host, Daniel Perez.
Welcome to the Future of Ground Transportation. Today we have a special guest, Christina Buwari, CEO of Rest and Limousine. Christina, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure and an honor. So let's get started, Christina. Tell us a little bit about how you got started in this business. How was it when you first started, and how it is today?
How is it now?
Correct.
So that's kind of a crazy story. I always like to talk a little bit about my journey in life. Because it led to where I am. So I was born in Japan, and my parents were American, but they were in the Foreign Service. And so I lived in Japan, Brazil, Portugal, and then 10 years in Africa. And I wanted to join the Foreign Service also. So I went to Washington, D.C., and I went to college at George Washington University, got a degree in international affairs. And instead of joining the Foreign Service, I got a job with a nonprofit called the Overseas Education Fund. And they sent me back to Africa, and I worked in Somalia. And I did that for 2 years on and off. Like, I was back and forth between D.C. and Somalia for 2 years. And it was very, very difficult. It was probably the most difficult country to live in. I mean, they didn't have electricity. As you know, it's a Muslim country. And as a woman, I had to cover myself from head to toe. I had to drive a four-wheel drive truck and get gas on the black market. And it just wasn't the glamorous life of a diplomat's child that I was used to. And I was like, I don't think this is for me. So I came back to the States, and the only job I could find was 100% commissioned sales advertising job. So I'm cold calling out of the yellow pages. If you remember those, you may be too young. And I got an appointment with William Buwari, who owned Rest and Limousine. I got an appointment to sell him an ad. So I sold him an ad, and then he asked me out. We started dating. And about 3 or 4 months later, he said, quit your job and come work for me. I can't afford to pay you, but I'll pay your bills. And I did that. I went to work for him and didn't get a paycheck for 2 years. Within a year, we were married. And, you know, the first thing I said to him was like, why don't we do weddings? And he said, he doesn't like to deal with brides. And I said, I'll deal with brides. So I bought lists of brides, cold called them. And within a year, we're doing 100 weddings a week. Wow. And then I'm just in my office minding my own business, and this guy knocked on the door and said, do you guys want to bid on a government contract? I said, what's a government contract? And he said, well, there's these two vans that go back and forth from Reston, Virginia into Washington, D.C. every day. And if you win the contract, I would like to be a driver. So he brought me the paperwork. I won that contract. That was my first government contract. And then I thought to myself, well, there have to be more of these. And I found out that every single government agency had an inner city bus route connecting their buildings. And so for the next 10 years, I won every government contract that I bid on. We were growing really fast. We started with 5 cars. And by the time those 10 years were up, I think we had about 70. And we were also about to lose our small business status. So you could only win government contracts if you were a small business. So we diversified into hospitals and universities and grew into the company that we are today. Today, we are 250 vehicles, 450 employees, and about $33 million in revenues. And just to kind of put some closure on that story, I asked for a divorce 10 years ago and bought my husband out. So the company is 100% mine.
Wow. Congratulations on the journey.
Especially
with the background. I didn't know you live in so many countries. And originally from Japan?
Well, my parents were from Seattle, Washington, but they were assigned to Japan, and that's where I was born.
Wow. That is super remarkable. So today it is 250 vehicles, about 400 employees. How was it during the pandemic to survive the pandemic with 250 vehicles? And how does the war at Reston looks now post-pandemic?
So obviously the pandemic was very difficult. And the first 30 days after the pandemic, once the pandemic started, I think it was about March 13th is when we did our big layoff. We laid off 300 employees. And it was the worst day of my life. I just had no idea what to expect. And I have to admit, I'm a bit of a control freak and I like to control everything in my life. And yet now I had no control. So laid off 300 employees and, you know, the business came to a standstill. Now, the worst part was that we had about $1 million in deposits that we had to refund with no money coming in.
Wow. And this was all mainly from weddings, I'm assuming?
A variety of things. I mean, out of my $33 million in revenue, I do about $800,000 in weddings. So it's not, some of it was weddings. A lot of it was big corporate events, you know, big conventions and group meetings and events that were being held the next 3 months. So we just called our customers and said, give us 30 days to figure this out. But I literally thought I was going to lose everything. I sold my house. I just didn't know how I could possibly get through this type of trauma. Thankfully, we got the first PPP loan or the EIDL loan. And once we started getting those loans, we figured out that we could probably find a way to stay in business. Yeah. But the pandemic gave us a great excuse to cut expenses to the bone. We spent that time, those next couple of years, becoming more efficient, downsizing, right-sizing, and just fixing everything that was broken at my company. And although 80% of my clients shut me down, 20% kept us going. We drove pilots for private jets. That business grew. We did organ transportation. That business grew a lot.
Nice.
We did, we did some commuter shuttles for fulfillment workers that had to get to work, and that business grew. So at the end of the day, the first 30 days were really, really bad, but after that, some of my customers wanted to add equipment so they could offer social distancing on the buses. And so at the end of the day, we were only down that year in revenue by 40%.
Only.
I mean, I think most of our industry was down 90%.
That is crazy.
So we were down 40%, which still qualified us for all the government help. And again, we used that time to become a better company. And we came out of the pandemic way stronger, better. I did get rid of 50 vehicles, but then I bought 50 new vehicles as well. So the 250 number stayed about the same, but we came out of the pandemic stronger. We found in our market that we lost 50% of our competition. And so people couldn't find equipment. And clients would call us and say, we've called 12 companies. Everyone's sold out. Do you have anything? And we would. We started charging surge pricing. If someone orders a vehicle same week, we charge 10% more. If they order within 24 hours, we charge 20% more. And so far, no one has really said no to that. They're willing to pay for it when they need a bus. And as you know, I'm mostly a bus company. I do have sedans. I have about 10 sedans, 10 SUVs. I have about 80 vans and the rest are all buses.
Got it. And what are the main challenges that you're currently experiencing at Reston post-pandemic, whether it's, based on a lot of the obstacles that are happening within the industry, it could be labor shortages. What are the biggest concerns and obstacles that you're currently experiencing, Christina?
Well, a lot of our labor issues went away because we raised our rates 30% coming out of the pandemic, and we're paying our drivers 30% more. So that really helped. And I would say that for most of the time, we have been maybe 90% staffed, which is pretty good for us.
90%.
But I would say labor is still an issue. When we win a new contract, it takes us longer than it used to get staffed up for that. It's not just drivers, other people at my company, whether it's a mechanic or a detailer or a dispatcher or an HR manager, people at that level are getting poached and being offered more money and better jobs somewhere maybe where they can work remote. That's still an issue. I think supply chain is maybe my most expensive issue. Like when a vehicle goes out of service, it takes way too long to get it back. If there's a part, like if it's in an accident, and it has body damage and you need new parts, I think before the pandemic, you were looking at maybe 30 days. Now it could be 90 to 120 days to get a vehicle out of the body shop. That is very expensive when you think of the downtime. Those vehicles just not earning any revenue. And then, of course, I had another note here. Pricing. Like, I used to spend about $130,000 on a bus before the pandemic, and now they cost $200,000. So, and of course, we're passing those prices along to the client, but everything's really changed.
Totally, totally. And to switch a little bit of the subject here, which you brought some really good perspectives, as a woman business owner, how has that helped you? And what would be your message to other women leaders in the industry as well?
Well, you know, I always tell people that I never really felt that being a woman held me back in any way. You know, people always say, oh, you're in a male-dominated industry. And I'm like, it's business. You know, like, I can do every single job at the company except for change the oil. I can, and any mechanical work, obviously. I can't do any of the mechanical work, but I can do everything else. I can wash cars. I can dispatch. I can do anything. And I did it all back in the day when the company was small. So it doesn't matter if you're a man or a woman. I think that women actually have some really good skills for transportation. And it's because of the logistics part of it. You know, we're all moms that are juggling all of these balls in the air. We're managing our children's schedules. We're managing the household, you know, all the responsibilities at home. We're managing all of the sports. We're managing so many things. And that's exactly what the limousine business is like. We are managing cars and drivers and all the changes that come in throughout the day. I think women we're born with that raw talent of dispatching. I had a lot of women working for me in dispatch and in management and a lot of female drivers too, especially with their CDLs. And I'm very proud of them and they do great. And, you know, women, I think as leaders listen well and they're more compassionate. At my company, I try and treat my employees like family, even though we consider ourselves a family-owned business. My son works for me. We want them to feel like it's still a small family-owned business, even though we're pretty large. But we do a lot of things to make sure our employees feel cared about, and one of our core values is caring. And I do believe that differentiates me from my male competitors, because a lot of drivers will come to work for me and say they weren't treated very well somewhere else. And that's really what can separate you from your competition, is happy employees. And so that's really my goal, is to have happy employees.
Totally. That's very well said. Thank you, Christina. And with this labor shortages, what are you guys doing to stand out from your competitors? Because it's so competitive, right? So I'm curious to see what is it that you guys are doing that is working and what's not working.
You know, there's a lot of things that we're doing that we never did before. You know, like, for example, driver schedules. We let them pick their schedule. You know, they submit their schedule a week in advance and tell us when they want to work. And then we schedule them when they're available. You know, back in the day, that was never an option. You know, the drivers worked when we told them to work. And now it's the ball is in their court and they pick their hours and they really like that. And they like the flexibility of that. So that would be something we're doing to differentiate ourselves.
I love that idea, Christina, especially with Uber and Lyft, where those drivers has that flexibility and they could kind of be their own boss, right? It creates that freedom perspective, so that way they could just work whenever they want. But do they have a minimum of hours that they need to fulfill, or no?
I mean, it depends if they're full-time or part-time. And we love part-time drivers because they're more flexible. We don't require anyone work 40 hours a week. But honestly, most of my drivers work 60 hours a week. They work 40 hours a week, and then they work 20 hours of overtime, and they get paid overtime. And that's another benefit, is we have so much work that the drivers that are working for me are making good overtime and they really enjoy that.
Got it. And are you guys using a specific platform to manage all the schedules, or how does it work? Or is within your limousine or bus software?
We use Santa Cruz as our limousine management software. A lot of the sort of scheduling is done manually through Excel spreadsheets. And, you know, we just keep track of people's hours and we keep track of their schedules through Excel.
Got it.
There may be better technology out there for that.
This is what I'm thinking behind my mind. But that is a great perspective, and I appreciate you sharing that, because, again, it's such a huge obstacle right now in the industry that I want to make sure that clients and users understand what is actually happening in this industry and what all these bus companies and limousine companies are doing to make sure that we bring A players into our clients in order to service them, but also like understand the intricacies behind the curtains. And switching a little bit of the subject, Christina, where do you see this industry in the next 5 to 10 years with autonomous vehicles, electrical vehicles, flying cars? Let's start with electrical vehicles. Where do you see the electrical vehicles getting into the sector in the next 3 to 5 years?
Well, I mean, they're absolutely going to be here, and they're coming. I mean, customers are asking for electric vehicles, but they just don't want to pay for them. I don't currently have any electric sedans or SUVs or any. I don't have any electric vehicles. About 3 years ago, I won a grant through Maryland to buy 2 buses, and so I did that. And I put $40,000 down, and I ordered 2 electric buses. A year later, they weren't ready. A year after that, 2 years after that, they weren't ready, and I canceled the order. Meanwhile, I spent $50,000 on charging stations at my Maryland office that are now obsolete. So, you know, that whole electric technology really frustrates me, because it's just really slow, and the buses are small, and they don't have a lot of bandwidth, so that they really aren't practical for my business. Most of my shuttle bus contracts start at 6 o'clock in the morning, and they go until midnight. You can't do that with 1 electric bus unless you take it out of service to charge it. So I've done proposals. A lot of my customers ask me to give them multiple options. And so I offer electric pricing on electric, CNG, propane, and diesel. And until this fall, everyone picked diesel because it's the cheapest. Then this fall, one of my clients picked propane. So I'm going to be running that contract for the next year in diesel while the propane buses are being built. But honestly, it's a headache for me, because now I have to get propane tanks installed at my office. And there's all sorts of safety issues involved, that it really takes more time to fuel up the vehicles. And it's more expensive. But the customer wanted to go with that route, and we're here to please. And as long as they're willing to pay the cost, it is greener than diesel, and so that's their way of making an effort to go green.
Totally, and that's such a great point, Christina, because I've been in similar RFPs where it could be a multi-million-dollar contract, but these electrical initiatives or vehicles will inflate the price 3 or 4 times, and that's where the client's like, no, we're not paying for this. So everybody wants to, the way that I see it is that everyone wants to go electrical, but no one's willing to pay for it. There's some companies that are willing to pay for it, but I will say that out of 10 clients, it's probably like 5% that are willing to pay for it, 0.5%.
I'm assuming there'll be grants and the government will subsidize things, and we'll all be running electric vehicles maybe in 10 years. I think they're coming, and we're gonna have to pivot, and we're gonna have to embrace it. But there's a lot of things to work out between now and then.
Yeah, and the other point and perspective that you also brought up, and I appreciate you bringing this, is the actual support behind it, right? Because we have about 4 electrical vehicles at this point. But the support is horrible. You know, you have these vehicles that are constantly breaking down. And as you mentioned, it's more of a headache until everything is really fully up to speed. The mechanics are still not there yet with their own technology and the battery issues that we're still having.
Yeah.
So it's so expensive to maintain those vehicles, which most of the time they're being parked because they are hard to be utilized. So thank you for bringing that. And changing a little bit of the subject, Christina, what is the best business advice you ever got?
Okay, well, obviously I've gotten so much good business advice. I've been in business 32 years. But the single best business advice I ever got was, in 2007 when I was recruited to join a CEO peer group called Vistage. It costs about $20,000 a year, and you take a day off from work each month, and you go to an offsite retreat with 18 CEOs. And in the morning, you have a speaker that speaks on a topic, you know, ranging anywhere from HR issues to, you know, forecasting your numbers or, you know, time management, whatever it might be. I was in that group for 13 years, and that is really where I learned how to scale my company and how I learned how to do everything the right way. No. Because again, I'm a political science major that was just trying to figure out the business for 15 years until I joined Vistage. And then I truly got educated on how to do everything the right way. And it was worth every penny. I love CEO peer groups. That's where I do my learning. I'm still in three different ones now.
If you don't mind sharing.
So my old Vistage group, we get together once a month for lunch. So that's a peer group. And then I'm in another Vistage group that we get together once a month for lunch. And then I'm in a group called Inner Circle. And you have to do $50 million in revenue to get into that group. But they let me in at $33 million because I'm a woman and they couldn't get any women to join. So that group is great because my business grew in Vistage. When I joined Vistage, I was about $10 million or maybe $12 million, and I grew to $32 million. When I left Vistage, a lot of the other people were still at about $10 million in revenue, and a lot of the bigger companies had left. So I was the largest company in the group when I left. And so this other group now with people that are doing $50 to $100 million in revenue, I'm there to learn from them. I need to learn from people that have bigger companies and bigger problems than mine. Cool. And that's a great group.
Now, I appreciate you sharing this because I sort of disappeared from the bus industry because I was so focused on focusing on other peer-to-peer groups. So my brother is in Vistage as well. I started my journey on EO. And from EO, I recently qualified for YPO, and I've been in YPO for the last year. And now I got to look into Inner Circle. I love that you shared that nugget. So thank you very much for sharing that.
Well, YPO is great. It's great.
I love it. And it also has revolutionized my business expertise in many different areas, especially with folks that are doing 100 million, 100, 200 million, half a billion. And most importantly, what I've been very impressed and I have appreciated the most is what they call the high caliber guns, guys that are get hired by public companies to run a company, and they're making 2-3 million, and they also qualify to YPO, and they're sharing all this business nuggets as well. So yeah, thank you for sharing that. And then what would you say, Christina, like, are the 2-3 most important things that have helped you become the woman that you are today and the success that you have achieved as of today?
Well, I would say that it's very helpful to be an extrovert. I grew my company by doing a lot of networking, and I literally networked for, you know, at least 4 events a week for 20 years. And I've built this incredible database of clients and networking, you know, colleagues. And that you can't do if you're an introvert. So I'm blessed to be an extrovert. So that was one thing I think really helped me a lot. The other is that I think my raw talent is marketing. I just have always, especially when my company was smaller, because I don't really do it now, but when my company was smaller, I think I did a really good job marketing and coming up with new ideas to promote our company, get in the news, grow our email database, and just, you know, just always be out there. The brand is a brand that most people recognize in Washington, D.C., and it might be because we donated a wine tour, or maybe it was because, you know, we were on a board and we volunteered our time. I've just spent 20 years networking and volunteering my time on boards and being very active in the community. And I could never have done that if I wasn't an extrovert. So that is just, I guess, my raw talent.
Super cool. Super cool. And Christina, with that being said, what are the 1 to 2 business books that come to top of your mind that you recommend to all the listeners?
So I do quite a bit of speaking, especially to women's groups and entrepreneurs. And I think the first business book that I read that really spoke to me was called Mastering the Rockefeller Habits. And it was written by Vern Harnish. You may have heard of it because he was the founder of EO.
All right.
And he lived in Ashburn, Virginia. And I went to one of his two-day seminars. And in that book, it talks about how legal problems can put any company out of business. And now you always have to make sure you do everything legally. And I thought that was great advice. He talks about how you should have scheduled meetings every week at the same time. And I remember before I read that book, my manager meetings were on different days depending on my schedule. And then after I read that book, I said, okay, we're going to meet on Tuesdays and I'm never going to book anything else on Tuesdays. I am going to be in the office on Tuesdays and we're going to have all of our meetings on schedule every week. And I think that was a big change, a positive change for my business. And then it talks about having a five-year forecast, always knowing where you're going the next 5 years, you know, laying out your goals and then how are you going to get there financially, you know, like a financial forecast for 5 years. That's been very helpful for me. So that's the first book. The second book that I love is called Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi. And it's basically a book that teaches you how to network. And it teaches you that if you want to be effective at networking, you can't network and expect to like go back to the office and start getting calls. You know, networking is a long-term process and it's about building relationships. And it's about you giving first of yourself before you ever expect anything in return. And when I read that book, I felt like I could have written that book. Although I'm a horrible writer, I couldn't have written the book. I read it and I thought that was my life. That's what I experienced in my 20 years of networking. And so I always tell people to read that book because it really tells you how to do things to grow your influence.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for sharing those nuggets as well. And Christina, for all the listeners, how can they stay in touch? How can they contact you?
So my email address is super easy. It's Christina with a K. And you don't have to worry about my last name. It's just Christina at Reston, R-E-S-T-O-N, limo.com. And I'll answer any emails I get. And, you know, I appreciate being on this podcast. So thank you for letting me tell my story.
Now, thank you. It's a pleasure having you and an honor having you on this podcast. We will make sure that we will add your contact information as well as your LinkedIn information into the episode. It was a pleasure, Christina, having you in this podcast. Thank you very much. Stay tuned. Thank you all for joining the Future of Ground Transportation, and we'll see you in our next episode. Thank you, Christina.
Thanks, Daniel. Have a great evening.
Thanks for tuning in to the Future of Ground Transportation. We appreciate you coming along for the ride. If you found value in this episode and want to hear more, please make sure to subscribe to the show.